Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End. We're winding our way down to the end of the season because there's only a few games left to go. But we're talking on Sunday after Watford's 0-0 home draw against, well, you'd like to call them potential playoff Hull City, but they were not. It was a game, and we're going to talk about that. But the big thing we're going to talk about is who really should be Watford's player of the season. And we'll sort of try and figure out who that might be. And it's often a hard thing to do in a season where it's been a little bit poor, let's say. I'm joined this morning by Jason.
Good morning.
And Michael.
Hello, John. Yes, it is Sunday. And I think by my calculations, that makes it... I loved your description of yesterday. It was a game. I think that probably we might be able to end the podcast there. I'm not sure. A few listeners might be disappointed if it ends after 45 seconds. But my calculations make that.
So 144 days.
145 now, because it's Sunday.
Yeah, now 145.
So 145 days since our last home win, which is a record now and that I'm sort of rather obtusely proud of. I'm quite enjoying it. I'm seeing how long we can stretch it out. But so in the absence of a Watford win, I want to say three quick shout-outs. Well done to Hemel Storm Basketball. They overcame the Bradford Dragons last night in the playoff semi-finals. They're to the playoff final in Manchester next week. Well done to my hometown club, Cheshire United, who won the league. They got presented with the trophy yesterday. Amazing scenes down at the Meadow. And congratulations to another local side, Wealdstone, who I know a lot of Watford supporters go and watch Wealdstone when they can't watch Watford, me included as well. I've been to see them a fair few times over the last couple of seasons. They survived in the National League, which is no mean feat. One of the smallest budgets, if not the smallest budget in the league. They beat Oldham, who of course were in the Premier League back in the day, 3-2 away yesterday to stay in the National League for another season. So incredible effort from all those three, local to me anyway, sides. So yeah, well done to those guys.
Yeah, I was at Hemel Storm as well, and it was very tense. 80-79 in the end, with some very tight last couple of minutes of that game, but all good in the end. So we're going to talk about the game yesterday, and then we're going to talk about the play of the season. But I tell you what, I left that game yesterday. It was enjoyable, at least more enjoyable than many games we've seen. But I left at least buoyant after that game. Jason, how are you? What was your head after it?
Yeah, I think it was okay. It was I thought it was a good end-to-end game at times. Hull obviously wanted to win to try and keep their vague hopes of playoffs alive.
Not that you'd know it, Jace.
They had a lot of skillful players, didn't they? A lot of players that you thought would have the ability to maybe turn us inside out, and that didn't quite come to fruition. I thought we coped reasonably well. I think I like three at the back because we always seem to have someone available to make a block, to make a challenge if the first man gets beaten. I thought that worked quite well. And what could have been some dangerous threats on their side, I think we nullified quite quickly. But I think it was that they tried to break, we tried to break at times. Again, the usual thing, final ball not always there. We got some crosses into the box when we did actually have a couple of decent chances from those crosses, particularly first half, that we didn't take. And at times when we were in the ascendancy and we were putting the pressure on, I think all three of our centre-backs were beyond the centre circle as well. It was almost like a training session in their third of the pitch at times when we were yeah, on top. And then equally, we had to do the defending when they got on top. So it was good for a 0-0. And obviously, the bar was set low when you compare it to the first game back after the World Cup last year that was a training session, I think. No one seemed to be too bothered about putting too much of a shift in that game. So, yeah, relatively speaking, I was reasonably entertained, just missing that goal, wasn't it?
Yeah, and a more recent comparison is the Preston game at home, which was 0-0, and that was the most 0-0 you could possibly fathom. And I think the first half, I think, left a lot to be desired. Watford's sort of failings in the final third were really laid bare, I think, in that first half, where they did break through a couple of times and were just unable to fashion anything resembling a proper chance or move. But I thought in the second half, quite a decent game did break out. I don't think it ever reached the heights that I expected it to. I messaged the group before the game and said, look, I think Watford are going to really have to work hard to contain the Hull side, who have got lots of talent. Fidigine out on the left, for example, has been making waves. We're going to have to work hard to contain them. They've got nothing to lose. They need to win to stay in the playoff race. And it, that just didn't materialise from them at all. And I think in the second half, it was a bit more like that, a bit more end to end. I think that's probably pushing it a little bit, but at least there were some chances created, as were minimal really in terms of how many times you're going to watch them. Watch them back until that could have got in. That was close, and Dan Backman was rightly man of the match, and that probably tells its own story. But yeah, second half was much more entertaining than the first. And like you say, John, coming out pretty buoyant. I don't think you're going to be disappointed not to have got a home win eventually. A bit tongue in cheek at the start of the pod there, talking about the days that have passed since our last one, and we are desperate for one. But I think at this stage, it's more about what we're seeing from Tom Cleverley's team, isn't it? And I think what we did see yesterday was a team that looked more comfortable in its own skin. They looked pretty well coached. As Jason said, they dealt with Hull's very well-publicised threats pretty well. I think Philogene is the big one. It didn't really have much of a kick, did he? He didn't have a say on proceedings. We dealt with him pretty well. So, yeah, I go along with you, John. I think coming out of that, it started very flat. The atmosphere, there was one stage you could just hear everyone just chatting. It was like a day at the cricket. There was just that hubbub, which is absolutely fine. It was that sort of game. There's nothing to play for us. But yeah, I came out of it thinking, yeah, okay, there is the stuff to build on there with this side. And we haven't always been able to say that. So yeah, I didn't come away massively disappointed from a Watford point of view. No, not at all.
Yeah, and I suppose we're going to talk about players this season. We'll talk about some players, but there were some sort of notable players. I love the retro chant, by the way. Super Danny Backman. Because, you know, it's been a while since he's had any sort of praise from the Watford faithful. And, you know, after the podcast with last week with Adam and Jason, we talked about what next year's team, who's going to be around and who's not. And we were humming and haring about him just purely because of that relationship that we have with him, or we've had with him over the last year or so. But he did the business yesterday. He made the penalty save. It wasn't a terrible penalty. It wasn't a great penalty, but he made the save in the penalty. Brilliant. It was Toufan. But also there were some very good last minute saves, shot stoppers. And that's what we know he is good at. And I think him getting, yeah, we do want in this last, well, it was yesterday, but this last home game next week, you do sort of want to win because we say we want to win at home. But that was the biggest win I think he could have got.
Tom Cleverley was very clear in his praise for Dan Backman as well. I think he called him the best shot stopper in the division or something after the game. And yes, we've done podcasts after the game and emotions are running high. Mm. You can be tempted to make sort of slightly grandiose proclamations directly after games, but Dan Backman's got his failings. We know that. I think the level of criticism personally that I think is unwarranted. I think we've seen he's quite highly strung. We've seen some disappointing antics from him over the years on the pitch. I think some of it has come from quotes in other countries' media that seem to have just stuck around and really been used to beat him over the head. We look, and this isn't me saying he's the world's best keeper, far from it, but just joining the dots from what Tom Cleverley was saying yesterday, it doesn't feel to me like there'd be a massive appetite for moving him on and getting someone new in during the summer. I mean, that's me making a grandiose statement, sort of extrapolating from a post-match comment from an interim head coach. But yeah, I think you're right to single him out, John. He kept us in the game late on. Very, very, a great double save in particular. You're right about the penalty. He went the right way. It was a nice height from Toufan. Surprise, surprise. It was a pretty lazy effort from him. If the keeper goes the wrong way, it goes in. It looks fine. But it didn't, and it was tremendous for him to have a, well, he made about as much impact yesterday as he did in his other performances at Vicarage Road, didn't he? Which is the less said about him and his Watford career, the better. But I think that double save from Dan Backman pretty late on, where he got injured, he got a knock to the head. It was a great save. It was brave, and it kept the clean sheet. And he's waking up this morning probably with a headache, taking into account that, but with a clean sheet. And he's in the business of keeping clean sheets for the team he plays for, and he did that yesterday. And once again, he's shown himself to be a decent shot stopper. I think he's rash. I think his distribution is poor. I think one time yesterday where I think Sir Alta and Hurt had the ball covered, he called for it and he came out of his penalty area to get it. That's absolutely fine. But he's probably halfway between the penalty box and the halfway line. He's come a long way to get it. And he's just wellied it without really looking about where he's sending it. And it went straight to a hole player. And if they'd have had their wits about them, they could have Wesley hurted him. and that's the sort of thing that I think probably it's warranted criticism. If you're a goalkeeper at this level, you're expected to stop shots, right? And then it's the other bits that build on how good you are. And we saw yesterday a distribution not great and those sort of slightly hot-headed moments when he comes steaming out. They could have cost us yesterday. He did the same for the Ryan Andrews own goal a couple of weeks ago. A few heart-in-mouth moments and he got to work on that. But ultimately kept us in the game yesterday. That double save I thought was terrific, and any time you save a penalty is a big tick for a goalkeeper. So, well deserved man of the match award accolade for Dan Backman in my view.
Yeah, there was a moment just before we move on to the others, just finish off the two fan thing. I know how much Jason you hate it when the announcers do this slight upwardness at the end of the oncoming player.
Yes.
But it was a brilliant by Richard Walker off going. Ozan Tufan coming off with Ozan Tufan. And it was like, yeah, that's exactly when I you did. No problem, not yeah. so at all.
So just for people who aren't aware about that, that's a tribute to the long term PA announcer at Birmingham. They've been doing that for a very, very long time. It's a sort of way of saying they're not really interested in the opposition players. We'll sort of, they're an irrelevance to us. So that's, I know you don't like it, Jace, and potentially it is a bit of an in-joke, but I quite like it. I think we do a lot of stuff and we'll talk about the Junior Hornets and we spoke about the away mascot and the treatment they get. I think it's tremendous. It gives me goosebumps every time I see that little away mascot trotting down to the away end, and the away end play their part, absolutely up on their feet singing. It's magical. But I think sometimes we can be a little bit too cozy, a little bit too much of a soft touch. So I think just letting them know that, yeah, come on, we're in our house. I quite like it.
Jason, the two other players, Backman really stood out, and the other, we know, they weren't going to necessarily win man the match, but they're returning players, Ken Semmer and also Jeremy Ngakia. I think maybe Ken was the biggest thing that lifted my buoyancy at the end of that game, because I just love him, absolutely love him. But they both came on after being out for quite a considerable amount of time. And I think that was maybe one of my feelings, because again, after last week talking about it, we were talking about Ngakia as in, well, he'd be here and he'd be the choice, but not necessarily feeling, oh, he could have an impact in this game, because I haven't seen him play in his squad, just saying the setup, because I haven't seen him play. Ken, we know what we can always get from him, and just seeing those two yesterday was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's always nice to see a player coming back from injury. They both got a sort of decent reception, and Gakia came on first, didn't he, I think, of the of the two. But I'm not sure if we saw as much from him as we did from Ken when Ken came on. And yeah, we got a sort of a brief cameo, didn't we, from Ken? We got what we expected, I think, taking players on down the left-hand side, some good little moves. There was a great little sort of shimmy back. He sort of got to the goal line, switched it back onto his right. Trouble is, we all know that he hasn't got a right foot. So we didn't get too excited when he did cut it. If he could, he could have stuck it. He had a great opportunity to put the ball back in, but he didn't want to on his right, so went back onto his left. But yeah, put a couple of decent balls in and sort of marauded down that left-hand side. But we know he's a capable, he was a capable filling left back as well. So I think with the two games to go, it'd be nice to see them involved again in those two games. I'm sure we will. I think yesterday probably not quite enough to see if they're sort of immediately ready to go. They'll ease their way back in. And like we say, we know we're done. We're not going up. We're not going down. There's no point in breaking them at this stage if they just come back. And Gaki still had a lot of strapping, didn't he, around his knee, and that which just worries me straight away. You see him come on and think, oh god, I hope he's going to be all right, I hope he's not going to go down so quickly. So we don't want to rush them back in when they've got a full summer ahead of them. They can do pre-season properly and get themselves back to full fitness, but it'd be good to see them get some minutes and just contribute to what Cleverley's trying to get them to do for the rest of the season.
He brought Ryan Andrews off, and I think that was the correct decision. A, to get Ngakia back and involved, and like you, Jason, I was a bit concerned to see the amount of strapping, but obviously he's fit enough to play. I think he's going to be playing for Watford for the next couple of, certainly next year. He's going to be in the thoughts for the right back, and I thought Ryan Andrews got himself into a bit of a pickle. I think we've seen over the, after the sort of initial excitement of him bursting onto the team has subsided. I think reality has set in a little bit, and we've seen A, that yes, he is going to be a good player, but at the moment there are a lot of things that he needs to work on. He does make mistakes. Positionally, he gets caught out. He can drift in and out of games. I don't think he did any of that yesterday, but what he did get caught up in is a bit of the nonsense. I thought Hull's, what we expected from Hull in terms of getting on the front foot, in terms of their attacking play, what they actually did was try to ratchet up the tension by falling over a lot. Effectively, and I thought the ref gave a lot. I thought the ref had a very, very poor game yesterday. He gave a lot of soft fouls, and there was, and I think someone put their over on the Graham Taylor stand side. Someone put their hand in Ryan Andrews' face. He went down looking for a reaction because the Hull players had been doing it all game and getting fouls and getting yellow cards for Watford players. Didn't happen, and he got a little bit wound up, and you could see he was getting more and more frustrated, and it felt like, in a game like that, where the ref was giving soft decisions all over the place, that he would be in danger of a red card, because I think he got yellowed.
The whole back line got yellowed.
I mean, in fairness to Hull, I thought the ref gave them a lot of dreadful decisions, far too soft. But then there was one after Liam Delap on loan from Man City. I think he's just coming back from injury. He looks like he's going to be a decent player. He broke down the right, was just about to get into the penalty area. Sir Alter got all of his shirt and just pulled him down. I mean, if you did WrestleMania a couple of weeks ago, it's very much that sort of move. And the ref just waved play on. I mean, it was just staggering. But yeah, I think Ryan Andrews was taken off for his own good, and just to give Ngakia a bit of time in his legs. And I think those two probably will be pushing each other next year. And I think they're not the world's greatest. Jeremy Ngakia certainly isn't the world's greatest right back, but he is competent. He's fine, just like a lot of these Watford players are, and like a lot of what we'll see next year, I'm sure. So someone who is solid and dependable up against someone who is a bit more raw and a bit more exciting, hopefully they will challenge each other to improve. And Ngakia will know that Andrews will be pushing and will be wanting to be the starting right back, and vice versa. And I think that's healthy. Ken Semmer, you guys have said it all really, but he just makes it look easy. He just drive to the byline and try and get a ball in. And we've seen players with more sort of supposed skill and talent than Ken make it look a lot harder. And he seems very hard to tackle, very hard to dispossess. The end product isn't always amazing, but that goes for everyone on the pitch in a yellow shirt. And I think we just look so much more dynamic with him down the left than anyone else we've had to offer. Jamal Lewis has sort of flattered to deceive. He just never looks strong enough. And Ken just gets his nut down and does what Ken does. And lo and behold, often that is plenty good enough.
It's the variety of crosses. It's the fact that he can cross from where Jamal Lewis always seems to do it, which is out wide into it, or he can run at them as well. Just a few more challenges, a few more. I wonder what he's going to do from the right backs. And it was just exciting.
Great to see.
Just great exciting. It was right in front of us. And it was brilliant.
Can I mention another one of the subs that I thought, before we move on, I thought made was. Had a good day yesterday, and that's Mieta Rajovic. I think, Arlo was very, we haven't heard him on the podcast for a little while, but he was very articulate in describing Rajovic's cameo yesterday, and I'm doing him a disservice by trying to repeat it. But it basically, he said he was far more dynamic. He was more aggressive. He wanted to get involved. He won the free kick. He took the free kick. It was a decent effort. He went over to take that long throw. He feels like he's playing for his place. He feels like he recognises his shortfallings and is working hard to get back into this side and get back as the starting number nine. I've been really impressed with, like with most of the Watford players, and we discuss, we know their limitations, but what you want to see is them working at that and trying to improve on their contributions in matches. We've bemoaned the whole season, the final third for Watford. It's been tragic, quite frankly, and yesterday wasn't really any different. So to see a striker who's been brought in as the starting number nine, benched under the new head coach, come on and really make an effort and really try to make an impact. He looks sharper to me. He looks a lot more sort of focused, disciplined, aggressive. So I think we're starting to see some, again, only, what did he play? He played 20 odd minutes and he didn't score. But who does for Watford these days? I was impressed with Arlo's sort of savvy picking out him, and he really articulated the ways in which he's sharpened up those key elements of his game, and there could be something to work with there. Just all feeds into what you said at the start of the pod, John. Little signs that all add up to coming away feeling a little bit buoyant about things.
Mm, also, that performance completely contradicted my feelings last week on the podcast about where we feel him going. Like, it's always like, well, if someone gives an offer in, then fine, you can leave. But they're like, oh no, there's a player there. Those feelings you have, always a possibility. Let's see.
That still may well happen. I think people will see he scored 10, 11, 12 goals, and £5 million would buy him.
Yeah, it would. So will he be part of our conversations about player of the season? We'll find out in a little bit. But before we start that, we've got, like I said, champions for several of the players. DCW, Matt Rowson, Geordie, Adam Drury and Colin have given their reasons why they think a certain player should be player of the season. It's interesting. I like to go and look at the different archives and Wikipedias and look up things when we know we're going to talk about this. Which position, Jason, do you think has won player of the season? Goalie, defender, midfield or forward? Which for Watford? This, and by the way, I think for my little adding up, and please do not take me for being right here, I think last year, João Pedro was the 50th person to win it. The first one being Andy Rankin, goalkeeper, in 1972-73. Didn't, of course, give it out in 2019. 2020, didn't give it out then. For you, what is which position do you think has won it the most?
Oh, interesting. I think a lot of goalkeepers have won it, haven't they? I think Chamberlain won it and Tony Coton won it, didn't he?
Three times,
exactly. So,
but only man to do that.
Only one goalkeeper.
Foster's won it, hasn't he? David Jones must have won it.
Yeah.
Did you win it? Yeah. So I'm going to stick with goalkeeper.
Not quite. But it's pretty high. In fact, it's quite even across it. The most, of course, as you would expect, is forward. But actually, 14 for forward, 14 for defender. Mm. Goalkeepers have got 12 and midfielders only 10. So 12 times we've given it to a goalkeeper. And as you said, Mike, earlier on about Dan Backman being the man of the match, you know, there's a certain reason when goalkeepers win the player of the season, because things aren't particularly good and they show off them their skills by making saves or as many as they can. But let's talk about, for you, what are the key attributes? What makes you pick someone to be player of the season, Jason?
I think it varies from season to season. Sometimes it's easy because someone will have a standout season. You say about forwards have won it the most. And if you've got a striker's banging the goals in there, they're the things that get the supporters excited. If you've got a winger sort of beating players and creating a lot of assists, again, that they're the ones that get you sort of bums off the seats and singing and cheering. And sometimes they're a bit obvious. When you get a season like this season, this has probably been the most difficult one I've done. I've put my vote in and it was the most difficult one I've had to do for a long time, I think. And And I think it's always someone that stands out. So you talk about strikers scoring goals, wingers taking on players. When it's been a difficult season and you're lacking things in a team, you look for those things that, or someone who's stood out and brought something to the table that perhaps the rest of the team haven't. And for me this time, it's more someone who's been a bit of a leader on the pitch. He's shown up sort of some leadership, and it's been a difficult season. So it's someone, yeah, who's just sort of shown a bit more than the others, a bit more desire, a bit more determination. And that's what I've gone for. So this season I've picked someone who's shown a bit more determination, a bit more sort of leadership on the pitch. So I think we've lacked that. I think that's been our biggest problem this season. And that's why that person has stood out for me.
Well, let's see, because who will you agree with? And can our champions, as I've called them, the championing the player, could they sway you? Jason, could they sway you? Mike, is there any sort of particular thing you look for in a player of the season to make the process of clicking as we do these days rather than writing in, which I'm sure you had to do back in the day when Andy Rankin won the first one, or show of hands at a meeting. I'm not quite sure how they did it back then. Is there anything particularly what you look for your favourite, let's say, player of the season?
I think Jason's right. You have to contextualise it against the backdrop of the season. And my initial thought when I heard you ask that question was consistency. That's something that you want for player of the season. And then actually, consistency is quite a low bar, isn't it? But I think that the fact that that was my initial thought sums up where we've been over the last couple of seasons. And the fact that this year and last year and the year before that, finding someone who has been consistently at the level that you would think warrants taking home a player of the season trophy has been difficult. So I think in seasons like this, it's all the things Jason said, that consistency, that sort of 8 out of 10 lifting the game. Whereas when you're doing well, it's someone who makes that difference at the top level, isn't it? In the margins, it's whether that's probably why strikers usually get the nod, because the difference is if you score 20, 23, 24 goals in a season, you're probably in a team that's doing pretty well, and ultimately it's the goals that make the difference. So at the moment, for me, my player of the season needs to be someone who is more often than not playing well. And I just don't think that we've been in a situation where we've had that. You know, how many times on the podcast have we scratched around looking for genuine positives where, you know, we've come away and gone, God, he was good again today. Just like he was last week and just like he was the week before. It hasn't really happened. So I think the fact that there is a vanishingly small pot of potential winners this season says it all. But yeah, at times like this, it's consistency. Other times it's those difference makers, isn't it? That's a player of the season for me. Someone who can turn a game and does so on a regular basis.
So let's see if we're not going to try and change your mind, and it's up to you, and you can vote for whoever you like for player of the season this year. I think the voting is still open, but we've got a couple of champions, and you know there's five players who we've sort of shortlisted to it. Your shortlist might be different from ours. First one, we're going to look at the first three we'll look at of all midfielders, and so firstly we'll hear from the Brigadier, Mr. Colin Mace, and his case for Tom Dele-Bashiru.
Now, I like a redemption story, and this was a boy who came to the club, always looked really good, looked like a potentially very good player, then got a very nasty injury, which is awful, particularly for such a young player, and taken a long time to recover, really, through rehab and whatever operations he's been through with his knee. And this season, he came back, and he seemed to have aligned himself with maybe a couple of other players who didn't really want to be at the club or were dissatisfied in some way. Some of his early performances early in the season were a bit lackluster, to say the least. And then turned up late, I believe, and was dropped by Valor and Ishmael and disappeared out of the team for a while. Disappeared out of the squad, in fact, the game day squad. And then he was asked by Val if he would come in to play at right back, which is not his natural position. And he agreed, which in some ways is part of the redemption story, because quite often players, once they get to that stage in their relationship with the manager, decide that they've had enough and they're not going to cooperate and they'll go and train with the under-18s. But he didn't do that. He came in, he did his best at right back. He looked very exposed in his first game, which I believe was either at Hull or Preston. I can't remember exactly. Then with Andrews coming back, he was pushed into midfield. And slowly, he started to rebuild his reputation as a good all-round midfielder, a box-to-box midfielder. And I've really enjoyed watching him play over the last few months, particularly under our new interim coach, Tom Cleverley, who has asked him to go into that midfield area and really work hard, and he's done that. And so, although I would say there are other players maybe who are more worthy of player of the season, I'd like to make a pitch for Tom Delibashiru on the basis that he looked like he was walking out of the club, and now he's become integral to our midfield. And I like that story because it shows that he's learned his lessons, perhaps, or he's matured, grown up, and recommitted himself to our club. For that, I think he deserves a good shout for player of the season.
By the way, if you have been to see the latest, the new Amy Winehouse film, biopic, you see the Brigadier in there playing the record company boss. So you might see him there. And he sent us a picture yesterday of him not looking very good. It was all makeup because he was being attacked by a bear. But anyway, that's another film to come out later on from the Brigadier.
Just to point out, he wasn't attacked by a bear in the Amy Winehouse thing. That's just completely separate.
Adam Drury has put a case forward for another midfielder, but there's a slightly different end of his of their career, Mr. Jake Livermore.
Jake Livermore has a fantastic case to be named Watford's Player of the Season. I think actually he's one of the most surprisingly successful signings I can ever remember Watford making, considering last summer the feeling around him, myself included, was that his legs are gone, he wasn't really playing at West Brom. It didn't feel like the most inspired signing at all. But actually, his best form this season has coincided with Watford's best form. That run of away wins in December is particularly memorable, and he played a key role in them. But also when he first came into the team in October, when we were in really, really bad shape after that defeat at Sunderland, and he helped to stabilise us and he helped get this season back on an even footing. He's had a really, really good role to play on the pitch and off it. Looks like a fantastic teammate, really popular. Hasn't been playing in the last few weeks, but you can still see him on the pitch at the end of games, involved in celebrations, commiserations, whatever it may be. So I think he's made a really good impact, and I think he's got a big case to be player of the season.
And finally, from our midfield trio, Mr. Edo Kayembe, being championed by the man who once tried to champion Stephen Berghaus as Watford player of the season for giving up a year of his career at Watford. That was literally his reason why he did it. This is Geordie saying why Edo Kembe should be our player of the year.
My nomination for player of the season 23-24 is none other than our Umbongo powered midfield dynamo, Edouard Edo Kayembe Kayembe, a player so good they named him twice, at least according to Wikipedia. This season, Edo's really found his feet for us. He started the year actually on the bench, but he got his chance at the start of October and became a mainstay in the team in that run we had between October and December, where we picked up nearly half of the points we've gained all season. He's become an important part of our team. So when we have enough of passing it around the back, he's often the outball into midfield. He starts our attacking moves, he rolls defenders or opposing midfielders and charges forward, creating space for the attacking players. And this season, Edo's added goals to his game. He's actually got 5, which is more than any other midfielder, and only one less than more attacking players like Yasser Asprilla and Vakoum Bayou. They're not tap-ins. You can close your eyes now and just picture Edo probably in the light blue away kit, turning and striking the ball inches above the ground into the corner of the net past the goalkeeper with his powerful left foot. And as if we doubted his importance to the team, that injury that pushed him out of the side at the start of the year and cost him a trip to the AFCON and the chance to represent Watford on the international scene was when our form really went out the window. But as soon as he was fit, he's back in the team. And there's something about Edo that makes him feel like a veteran, but he's actually only 25, so we've got plenty more to come from him, potentially even captaincy next season.
The campaign for Kembe for captain, I think, starting there from Geordie. So it's really interesting, though, Mike, you know, some of the things that you've said, and one reason is consistency. And all three of those players have been out of the squad for a length of time, two of them particularly for injury, one Tom Delibashiru for, you know, his behaviour when we put two and together. You know, but the redemption story, the late in his life or late in his career, late in his life, sorry, God, Jake. Yeah. Late in his career, but still playing a role. And Kayembe, you know, Matt Furniss was really, really positive about him on one of our data pods, you know, and almost like him not feeling in the same way when you say a striker scoring goals and they're playing their role. When he has been around, he has been, you know, you could almost, I can't overlay it, but when Watford have played better for periods of time, I'm pretty sure Kayembe is the one who's been in the team. Hmm. What do you reckon to the cases that Colin, Adam and Geordie put to you?
Well, firstly, you can tell Geordie works in marketing with his sort of slightly wistful, evocative, dreamlike sort of asking us to conjure up, close your eyes and imagine Edo Kayembe in that. And I loved it. I was drifting away. I did actually close my eyes, Geordie. So yeah, quite persuasive. I think Jake Livermore, I don't think, is featured enough. I think he played a key role in a key time for the team. We were struggling and he sort of dragged us up by our bootstraps. Most people will remember the two goal salvo at QPR. I was there for that and it came out of nowhere, rescued us from a pretty turgid performance. And I think he did that not with his goals, but with his performances in other games. He was the leader that we were crying out for. Didn't start the season, hasn't ended it. So I think that probably precludes him from being a serious contender. But he will be getting a definite hat tip in the dressing room for his, no Watford fan, I don't think, would argue that his contribution to this season has been vital and a really, really canny signing. Kayembe, I mean, I described him in a podcast a couple of weeks ago as a runaway bin lorry. I mean, that's got to be good enough for a player of the season for me. But yeah, I agree with Geordie. He has added goals to his game. It was a bit of a laugh last year, wasn't it? It was like, when's Kayembe going to score? He keeps getting these chances on the edge of the box and he's started knocking a few in. And I think when he plays well, he looks an integral part of this Watford side. Again, distribution, not his forte, but the other parts of his midfield game are really important for this side. And that leads us on nicely to Tom Delibashiru. They make a good pairing, I think, in the middle there. And I do agree with Colin's description of it as a redemption story. His sort of his season arc has been fascinating. That you can't forget the bad injury he's had. Came in and there was that discipline issue. Was then shunted into right back, where I actually think he did a really, really, really good job. I think the things that make him a good midfielder made him quite handy as a right back as well, especially when we're struggling with that transition from front to back. And then since he's gone into midfield, didn't play yesterday, I think they're protecting another potential injury he's got. I think he's looked the real deal. I think he's looked like almost like a new player, I think, in midfield. He seems to have grown in stature, in confidence, in strength. He reads the game well. He sets the tempo. And that's not something that we've seen many Watford players do. So, yeah, big shouts for all of them. And I think each of them can hold their heads up high at the end of this season and worthy contenders on our shortlist for sure.
And I think if you picked a part of the team, be it defence, midfield, or attack, you had to give them the section of the team of the year. I think midfield would by far be the winner if you look consistently across it. Jason, any of those? You know, if you had to pick one of those out of the better of the players for the win of the midfield player of the season, who would you pick out of those three?
This will reveal my okay. choice for player of the season. I can't believe that Mr. Parkin said that Jake Livermore should be excluded because hasn't played enough games. And to be honest, I don't think they apart from Wesley Hoots, there probably aren't that many players that have had a sort of consistent long run in the team, sort of from end to end, have they? I think a lot of players have had even Backman, was replaced by Hamer during the season. I'm going Jake Livermore. You said it yourself, Mike, that he bought leadership to the team when we needed it. Adam made a very good point as well, sort of about the up to the Sunderland game. The Sunderland game was almost sort of that nadir. It was not looking good at that point, and sort of Livermore's come in, and I talked about, when I say what I was looking for and what I looked for this season, was someone who was leading the team, because we have lacked leadership in this side. And I thought he'd just done a fantastic job of that. He has a sort of consistent calmness about him when he plays in that sort of deeper role. I think he did just, there's always this feeling, and other fans of other clubs probably say the same, but when we're defending at times, it looks like we're panicking, you know, you sort of, when we're up against it, there's a panic. And Jake always brought a calmness to proceedings there. And that leadership, that calmness for me, that's why I voted for him as player of the season.
You're right to call me out, Jason. I've just looked it up. He's played 67% of Watford's matches. He's played 29 times for Watford this season. And so my perception there was wrong. I guess it's because a bit of recency bias. And he missed out at the start and the end of the season. But yeah, I make you right, Jace. I think that calmness is something that is often missing from Watford this season. I think it's probably something that's missing from struggling teams. And the fact that he came in when he did, and sort of, we spoke a lot about the start of the season and that sticky patch, Leeds away, Sunderland away. And we built up a bit of a head of steam after that, didn't we? And that was probably largely due to him coming in, and that old head, not quite as old as you seem to suggest, John, a bit earlier, that old head understanding what a championship team needs to navigate its way through matches. Perhaps I'd perhaps understated that a little bit. Very, very persuasive there, Jace. But just shows what I know, how much attention I pay, that he paid two-thirds effectively of Watford's matches.
So we're taking Jake Livermore forward, I suppose, from the point of view of the representative of the midfield. Two more we've got in terms of to be champions. Firstly, Matt Rowson, blogging Watford legend from way back in the day. Be happy now, of course, formerly Be Sad. He puts a case forward for Wesley Hoot.
So I'd like to champion Wesley Hoot for Watford player of the season for a number of reasons. I think there are a number of players who have played well at particular times during the campaign. But if you're looking for someone who's maintained their level throughout, then Hoot played every minute of every game until his recent suspension. He maintained his level throughout. He's been a leader on the pitch, very visibly the captain of the side. Displayed humility, I think. This is someone who has played at a much higher level, but there's never been any suggestion that he thinks he's slumming it by playing for a team in the middle of the championship. He's always, it's a cliche, but given 100%, he's always had his heart in the game, even when the quality hasn't been there. I think the humanity of it, the fact that he has made mistakes, very high profile mistakes at times, and bounced back and not let those mistakes derail him, I think is a fine thing. He loses his temper, he gets angry, he channels that positively for the most part. You want to see a player with a bit of personality. If we can't win the division, if we can't get promoted, then you want to see real characters. And Wesley Hoot is a real character and has been a force for good throughout the season. And last, should probably have been first, but certainly in the reckoning, is quality. He is excellent for championship standards. He's the player who has maintained his level better than any other. That left foot is a fine thing, even if you take the goal at Hull out of the equation. The sort of searing cross-field pass doesn't always come off. It's a fairly predictable weapon, but it's one that's very difficult to defend against and that's been very effective. So, for consistency, humility, humanity, personality and quality, Wesley Hoot is my nomination for player of the season.
Now, Jason, you already voted, and I know Matt's not going to necessarily change your mind, but he does put a very good case for Wesley, doesn't he? And in fact, it was interesting. We've got Spreer yet. Of course, we've got Spreer. But, seeing the players, the club put out a video this week on socials about who the players would, unofficial, who would be the players' pick. And they were just coming out of training, going back in from training. And it was Wesley, and it was a Spreer mainly from them. Has Matt reminded you and persuaded you maybe that it's Wesley and not Jake who should have got your vote?
As usual, Matt has done a very good job of putting the case forward very eloquently. And in fact, he had mentioned the two things that sort of dissuaded me from voting for Wesley and sort of turned them round as positives. And that was the mistakes that he's made. And as Matt says, he's made some high profile mistakes. And perhaps this is where he's unfortunate. He's a defender. When a defender, like a goalkeeper, when they make mistakes, they get noticed. When midfielders make mistakes, less so. And Matt's absolutely right. He's sort of not let them bother him. He's sort of got up and gone with it and carried on. And he mentioned his anger as well. And that was another thing that sort of came into my head when I was sort of making my decision. He does get the occasional strop and the sort of the arms start waving around in the air. And perhaps I've suffered from some recency bias. As Mike mentioned that earlier, because he was having a bit of a strop a couple of weeks ago, wasn't he? I think it must have been the Preston game where he was sort of throwing his arms around and I was worried he was ending up being a sort of walking red card.
Well, he got his yellow yesterday, didn't he, from a bit of a dissent?
There was a little bit of that yesterday again. As Matt says, he channels that as well, and he's a character, and you sort of want that. And he's not stupid about it, is he? You can see it's there, and he doesn't go over the top with it. So good effort, Matt. I'm sticking with Jake Livermore, but it was a very good case, and I think you're right. I don't think Jake's going to be in the running. I wanted to vote for Jake, but I don't think he's going to get it. I think it is going to be between Wesley and Yasser.
Mike, how did Matt persuade you?
I mean, vote Rowson is what I say. we're heading up for an election. I'd get Matt onto my team. Very eloquently put, as you'd expect from the Bard of Vicarage Road. But look, I think Matt summed it up perfectly. I think Wesley Hurt, he came to us and I think there were question marks over him. We knew he was highly rated at one point and then Southampton fans derided him. Absolutely. Well, they worse than that. They seem to despise him, don't they? They hate him so much that they even boo Francisco Sierralta because he looked like him at one stage. But I think he's probably exceeded expectations for a signing. When we signed Wesley Hurt, did anyone go, brilliant, that's our centre-back sort of issues sorted? I don't think they did. And I think he's been good. I think Watford tend to be better in the team with him. I've talked a lot about distribution. And our lack of sort of ability to transition from front to back, our lack of ability to carve out chances. Well, at least what he has been able to do with those big diags, that wonder of a left foot when he's picked out decent passes, and I think he's looked better defensively as his Watford career has gone on. He's looked more assured. Jason spoke about how Jake Livermore is a calming influence, seems to be able to do everything at his pace. Well, I think there's a bit of that with Wes now as well, and I think, you know, he is an experienced footballer, and I think the others benefit from playing alongside him. I was actually watching Ryan Porteous yesterday and thinking how I got really upset with him at Leeds. I thought, and I've been upset with him a lot actually, and I think with hindsight I think some of his rushes of blood to the head have been down to the way Watford were playing. He was having to commit further upfield and getting caught out, and it made him look a bit daft on occasion. But I think the point is, I think Porteous, it's a formation thing, we talked about the back three earlier, but playing alongside players who are calm and in charge, know what they're doing, that back three feels like good to me. But I think it feels different without Wes in there for a number of reasons. So I think, yeah, I'll at this stage I will reveal my hand, and Wes is my man. He gets my vote just from what I said, which is about consistency, and I think we've largely had that from Wes, whether it's consistently getting booked or just consistently being decent. I think he's stood up this season, and I think the way that he's developed and how important he feels to me, certainly for the Watford starting 11, means he gets the nod for me. I think he has been someone who feels like he can make a difference, as opposed to people who can make a difference but don't necessarily, which might lead us on to our last potential player of the season.
Can I just pick up on something there, Mike? I know you have teenagers in your house. Diags? He's diags across the field?
Well,
is that one of those?
On.
Get on the bus, Mooney. Come on.
I've embarrassed myself getting the stats wrong, so I might embarrass myself getting the blooming terminology wrong as well. For a penny, in for a pound, and all that.
The final player who's going to be part of this shortlist, put forward by DCW, being the champion, and some may say the easiest to put the case forward. But we've done some amazing work from everybody so far to at least sort of make you think a little bit about why other players should be the player of the season. And this one is DCW with Yasser Asprilla.
Oh, Jesus, I'm a little bit out of breath. Just been on a run. My pre-season has started already. But will my choice for player of the season be at Watford next pre-season? I don't think so. But that man is, of course, Yasser Asprilla. Now, when choosing player of the season, sometimes people give it to maybe the most consistent player, somebody like Wesley Hoot, for example, who's played almost every game. Maybe they give it to a player that they feel deserves it for more than just his appearances on the pitch, somebody like a homegrown talent in Ryan Andrews. Sometimes if it's a really bad season, like we've had many of, the goalkeeper gets it. But this season, I don't think you can make any of those choices. It has to be Yasser Asprilla, because he is our best player and he has been our best player this season. When he's been on the pitch, he makes things happen. When he plays well, Watford tend to play well. He scores some brilliant goals. I've also voted for him in goal of the season for his goal away at Norwich. But if I could have done, I would have voted for his goal at home to Norwich with that excellent bit of skill to wrong foot the goalkeeper and smash it home from a few yards out. The presence of mind, the confidence, the skill to pull that off, I think is a great example of the talent that he has, the potential that he has, the potential that he's started to realise. He's clearly still got a little bit more to go. And whether we'll see that at Watford or whether he moves on in the summer, I love Asprilla. I think he's brilliant. I think he can emulate the likes of João Pedro and Richarlison in recent years of leaving us, going on to bigger and better things. And I will certainly miss him. But for me, the Watford player of the season for 23-24 is Yasser Asprilla.
There was a moment yesterday where Yasser went on a run. He went through, he pushed his way past a couple of players. He was strong. And everyone gave a round of applause. And we stood up, gave a round of applause. And Dave turned to me and went, "That's why."
It was an amazing run, actually. It was. Quite incredible run. But I think, in a way, that encapsulates Yasser's Watford career, and certainly this season. Promise, but not much at the end of it. And you guys will know more than anyone how critical I am of this Watford side and how desperately disappointed I've been with our attacking options. And we talk about Yasser and him being the next cab off the rank, and undoubtedly a supremely talented player, undoubtedly someone who's going to go on to much bigger and better things than what he's experienced at Vicarage Road so far. He will go on to be a top tier talent. I've absolutely no doubt about that. But have we seen anything approaching the best of Yasser Asprilla? And I will caveat this very, very firmly by saying that he has been playing in a team that is miles below his talent level. It's been set up in a way that is not conducive to getting the best out of his talent. Much like Ismail Assar, I think he's been a victim of circumstance with his time at Watford. He hasn't been able to shine to the level that I think he's capable of. And yeah, Dave pointed out an amazing goal at Norwich. He has scored some great goals. But in terms of delivering on a regular basis, and again, I don't make this his fault, but I just don't think he has. I don't think we've seen enough from him for him to be player of the season. I really am at pains to point out, I don't think that's his fault. I'm not doubting his quality. He's by far and away the best player at the football club. But have his performances been that of player of the season? I don't know. And your conversation last week with Adam Chaps about him staying for another year, developing, for me, if all things being equal, that would be the sensible option, because I think hopefully we've spoken about how Tom Cleverley, if he gets the job, has organised the team well. With the start of his reign, started to look more lightly on the front foot. That's not been the case for the last couple of games so much. I'd like to see him stay, develop. From a purely financial reason, I think we'd get more money for him if he has another year at Watford and plays well, similar to João Pedro. But I think that the financial restraints mean that we're going to have to sell him. I think we're going to sell him for less than he's worth. And I think, sadly, we're never going to see the best of Yasser in a yellow shirt. I think it's promise unfulfilled at WD18 for him. And that it makes me sad, the whole the Yasser thing. He's brilliant. I love him. I've championed him from the minute he joined the club. I mean, I'm saying that like it's a hot take. It's obvious he's brilliant. It's been a thrill to have him at the football club. If somehow we can stay here and really push on and get that best move for him and the best money for Watford to alleviate the financial stress that we're under, then that would be perfect. But I fear we've got two games left with him, and yeah, it makes me pretty sad, really.
Both of you have said you haven't picked him. Mike, they're clearly not. A fan, of course, but clearly not being persuaded by all the great things that DTW said, the wonder goals, the excitement, because that's what he is. He's exciting. And I remember, when I first saw John Barnes back in 1986, running down the wing, exciting, exciting, exciting. And that's what you love. And that he's, so in many ways, that he's added the excitement to this team this year. Anything in there where you could see yourself voting for a Spreer?
Not really. I think what you talked about there, John, about sort of he's the exciting one. So, and I talked about that at the start when you asked me what I'm looking for in a player of the season. When it's those players, when they're getting you off your seat. And Mike also spoke about looking for consistency. And as you said, we haven't had that consistency from him. And it would be great to see him perform at the level we know he can week in, week out. We've just not got that yet from him. And we've said this many times on the podcast before, he is still young and still learning and still developing. And it's a big ask when we have other senior players in the team that perhaps aren't delivering, to then put hopes on a youngster and make him pick up the pieces where the more senior players aren't. He'll still develop. He'll still learn, whether that will be at Watford or not. Like we said, next season, we don't know. But the consistency of the performance and knowing what we can get from him and not getting that in every game, that's why I didn't vote for him. And unfortunately, sorry, Dave, wouldn't be persuaded. Good on you getting out for a run though, mate. Well done.
I did like the sound of the tweeting bird background. Yes. And maybe those tweeting birds were inspired Dave to finish his message with this. But still not enough, Dave. Still not enough. This podcast is going to be put. Most of you are going to listen to this podcast once the voting is finished. It finished at midnight on Sunday the 21st, which is when we were recording this. But this podcast was not about to persuade you. It should be your choice. It should be who you feel is your player of the season.
Before we close the book, John, on the player of the season.
There we go.
I've got a last ditch submission, and I did. I did share this with a friend of the podcast, Steve Van Dyke, and he counselled against tabling this. I just wanted to run it past someone. He suggested this would be controversial. But hear me out. Joint Player of the Season nomination and a tin hat on. I'll borrow Matt Letizia's. Joint Player of the Season, Ben Hamer, Daniel Backman. Right, now hear me out.
This will be good.
So both have got their failings, right? We know what they're not good at, but what they are good at is stopping shots. And I reckon the goal of the season shortlist is really, really good, but they're all goals from sort of outside the area. They're not the ends of flowing moves or patterns of play that we develop. To be a goalkeeper, you've got to be able to react to chaos. You've got to make good saves. You've got to be brave. And I reckon if you put together, I might do it if I've got time. I mean, I can't share it because we'll get copyright strike and all that sort of stuff. I reckon if you do a highlights reel of Dan Backman and Ben Hamer's saves, they'd be pretty good. Now, well, better than pretty good. Very good. And also, so many of Watford games have been very, very tight. Decided by the odd goal, been draws and 1-0, yada, yada, yada. They've been very tight. They've kept us in games. You could argue that their goalkeepers, they're supposed to They're supposed to stop shots. They're supposed to stop goals. Well, strikers are supposed to score goals. We haven't done many of that, have we? We've talked about Yasser Asprilla being the best player on the team, best player at the club. Well, how many goals has he scored? I know he's not a striker, but they've done their job pretty consistently. Yes, there's been the occasional mistake, but the mistake from a goalkeeper is always amplified. Look at the finishing yesterday alone from Watford. Dismal again. So I put it to you that without Dan Backman, the combined efforts of Dan Backman and Ben Hamer, Watford would be going into these last couple of games really stuck in the relegation dogfight. So what? To change my mind, prove me wrong.
I've got one thing to say about your highlights package, Mike, and that is that Javier Cunha looked good on YouTube.
The player I had strong feelings about. I wanted him to succeed at Watford as well. And was his nickname the Bulldog?
Yeah,
I really wanted the Pitbull, something like that, something canine based. but it wasn't very good. Come on, vote Dan and Ben. Get it done.
You'll make choices, and we'll see who is the overall winner for player of the season. But hopefully that's giving you something to think about, and hopefully no one's panicking over picking the wrong person after hearing one of our many reasons in the podcast today. Yesterday, Mike, brilliant again. Like you've already mentioned, the stuff that always happens with the mascot from the away team. I think he predicted 3-1 yesterday. And fortunately, no one scored. So those are the things. But yesterday it was Junior Hornets Day, and there were lots of Junior Hornets flags being waved, special events sort of going on around the ground. Anne got herself on the microphone. I think she took it away from Richard and does her thing. My wife was with me, and with Anne speaking so passionately, some tears came into her eyes. But also,
I wonder why she put her sunglasses on.
That's exactly why she put her sunglasses on, yeah. And then there was a... and then, of course, Adey Boothroyd was back being interviewed on the pitch at halftime. Just some lovely, some fantastically Watford-y things to remember Adey, to him to come back and get the round of applause. He walked back to the boxes or wherever it was he was spending his afternoon. That wonderful Watford fuzziness we've talked about quite a lot, and euphoria that we can feel as Watford fans. Incredible. So great seeing those two.
Yeah, just amazing. I remember when I was a kid, somehow Mum managed to get a calendar signed by the first team. I think she was up at Vicarage Road. She bought the calendar. For whatever reason, the players were there, and they just kept coming out. She got these signatures on this calendar. Me and my brother opened it on Christmas morning. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was holding something with all these autographs on of my heroes. And I can remember it as clear as day, just the feeling. Mum was a hero. I was agog. So for Watford to... I know times have changed a little bit and access to players is different. You can get autographs, yada, yada. But to know how I felt as a youngster then, and you guys will have done it as well with the various Junior Hornets activities. For yesterday, for Junior Hornets, for boys and girls to be joining John Marks in commentary, Alan Cozzi as a photographer, joined the media team as videographers, kit team, ground staff, flag bearers, talking to Anne on the pitch, just being at pitch side, just extraordinary memories that just will never ever be forgotten. And just other clubs do it, of course, but we cannot understate or underplay the importance of giving the next generation this sort of love for the club that we have. I mean, it can be really hard. I know sometimes yesterday watching Watford, I think, God, I could be at Lords today watching the cricket, because this is quite a boring game. There's nothing really on it, and I think, oh, why do we come? It's just, is it a bit of muscle memory? Is it just because it's what we do? And it is what we do, but we do it because we love it, and we love the place, and we love the club, and we love what it's done for us. And the fact that it's doing it for the continuing, and we probably wouldn't be, I don't know, there's an argument for it, but we might not have been as into it if were we not Junior Hornets, were we not able to have the experiences we were as kids, stand safely on the family terrace, all that work. That this isn't lip service that Anne Swanson gets paid, by the way. She's not just wheeled out as some sort of token. The work that that woman put in alongside Graham Taylor and Elton John and everyone at the club, phenomenal. At a time when it was just unheard of. Football was not a place for families. It's impossible for us to almost go back to that age now. And there's a generation who have no idea what football was like in those days. No idea the challenges to attract families, to allow parents to feel comfortable with their kids going to football. And Anne Swanson was at the vanguard of that. So for anyone who just thinks that this is some sort of tokenistic rolling out of someone just for clicks, likes and applause, not a bit of it. That woman is astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. And the passion she has for this football club and the next generation is inspiring. And we are so lucky to have someone like that so deeply ingrained with the football club, and so lucky that people recognise the importance of it. And so there's a whole number of kids today sat at the breakfast table going through photos with their mum and dads and their brothers, doing the most extraordinary things at their football club. You can't put a price on that. It doesn't matter what the result was yesterday. It doesn't matter where Watford finished in the league. You can never take that away. That is a gift. That is something that's given to them by the football club. And that's what we mean by a football club is more than just what happens on the pitch. It's a club. It's something that you do together. You belong to it together. And again, the mascot, it gives me goosebumps watching that little boy or girl run to the away end, getting that adulation. It's unbelievable. Just imagine how that kid feels doing that, and then wakes up, going into school the next day on Monday, saying, "Oh, you should have seen it." And it's so important now more than ever, where we see television being the season ticket, really, for football. Mm-hmm. Most, you see on the way to the game yesterday, you saw people leaving Watford, leaving my hometown, Chesham, with Man City shirts on to go and watch the semi-final. All right, some of them may have stayed locally overnight, whatever. But a lot of them are just people it defeats the object because they were going to the game. But more and more often, people follow players, they follow teams, but they watch it on telly.
They find their fandom through the television, don't they?
And what the Junior Hornets does is it makes you a part of it. It makes you a part of it. And for Watford to be doing that, it just fills my heart with absolute joy. And it reminds me why we do it. It reminds me because we do it together. It's about fostering an environment where people can do good stuff and enjoy stuff together, like we do, like us three. We love it. It's great to have this time together on a Sunday morning talking Watford. And we do it because we care about it. And we care about it because of things like that. And to see all those kids doing that yesterday, brilliant for them. Good on the club for making it happen. Superb. Just superb.
And Jason, Ady Boothroyd, one of those managers that got us a promotion into the Premier League. He's, if you look at the career he has and has had, you could argue that, Watford was his peak, especially in terms of clubs, but he did manage the England under 21s when, previously we did a podcast where I went to visit him there at St. George's Park. But you could just see like the joy in his face at being back, almost like being home.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you say, we were his first manager job, weren't we? And it started well for him, and then sort of from then on in, it didn't quite take the trajectory I think he would have liked. But sort of that first full season was amazing. He sort of, as a new young manager, took a bunch of footballers who perhaps their careers had sort of gone off track a bit themselves. The likes of Marlon King and sort of picking up players that no one sort of really considered. Darius Henderson coming in from Reading, where he'd really not sort of done much there, and sort of getting him playing. I think he was probably lucky that we had Ashley Young in the team sort of breaking through. You need that little bit of luck, but he sort of molded this group of players from a team that, when he came in at the end of the previous season, were sort of likely relegation candidates. And it was only that win at Stoke that we've spoken about on a recent podcast, sort of making us safe. And we were that close to relegation and sort of turning this team into a side that, won promotion through the playoffs, but we were the strongest team of the rest, weren't we? We were the top two were flying, and we came third and quite deservedly so. And it was just that sort of intense attacking football that he had us playing. Some people went, oh, it's Watford, it's long ball again. But yeah, it was some great football, some great days, some great results. Was it, I think, Sheffield United who did go up that season. We won 4-1 up there, didn't we, if I remember rightly. And of course, the finishing with that 3-0 demolition of Leeds in Cardiff. Just what an amazing day that was.
And the playoff semi away at Paris, the first leg, 3-0. And that epitomised exactly what you're talking about. Jace just blew them away. Palace were convinced they were going to. They famously had printed up the
flyers, didn't they?
For going to Cardiff for the train that they chartered to go for to the final. It was just such fun, absolute sort of barnstorming. And like you say, Jace, it's almost the epitome of Watford, really, wasn't it? Sort of a bit of a ragtag and bobtail collection of players, and just had that alchemy of just managing to pull them all together, and it. Sadly, it did evaporate and ended sort of a bit messily, really, at Watford, didn't it, in the end. But that season just shows, we're looking with a bit of trepidation next year. And I'm very worried, as you guys know, about next season and the coming seasons as to what the squad's going to look like and how competitive Watford can be. But no one would have had that Watford side down for promotion. And we almost got into there was a time when he could have got automatic promotion. I think there was a game away. I can't remember. I think it might have been at, I can't remember anyway. We came close to closing the gap. And then, just there was only one team in it in the playoffs. Such fun. And it was just, it shows what can be achieved when everyone is pulling in the same direction. You get that correct sprinkling of players, of determination, of a need to sort of reinvent themselves. And like you said, Jace, with Ashley Young, players coming through, giving youth a chance. So Ben Foster in goal, of course, speaking of giving youth a chance. So great to see Adrian. Yeah, of course, it wasn't that long ago, was it? We all remember it like it was yesterday. Nearly two decades ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I think we talked about he had Ashley Young as his special player. We do have Asprilla, but he might leave. Does Tom Cleverley have a sort of similar position that AD had, where if he can pull this together? Something might happen next year, but we'll be doing it with a brand new player, Mike, who's been at training this week, Mamadou Doumbia, who was at London Colney this week. It looks like he's turning back up at the summer. That's an exciting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. We won't go into it now. We haven't got time or the energy to talk about the problematic nature of the Pozzo ownership, the issues that we are going to face. It's going to be a difficult summer. I think it's going to be an unpleasant time at the football club. I think cuts is going to be the order of the day financially. Watford are in a very, very perilous situation, and I have massive fears for the future. However, we've talked about Yasser Asprilla going on to great things, and he was brought in under this regime, moved on by this, and will be moved on by this regime, just like Richarlison was, just like João Pedro was. There's a whole host of players plying their trade, who once played for Watford, who are now plying their trade in the top flight. So what this regime has done has brought good players in, and you hope that this guy is going to be the next bright young thing that can give us that little bit of stardust that every team needs. Can he be our Ashley Young this season? We've got Hurtado, who you'd think, he went off to Gillingham on loan and very, very brief cameo there before he got injured, but seemed to make a decent impact there. We saw him a substitution appearance at Watford as well. He did look very raw, but players are and they can develop. We've seen that. If they're good enough, they're old enough. So perhaps he's going to make an impact as well. But we can but hope. And yeah, nice little reminder to see him at London Colney that signing was made. He's going to have a full pre-season with the club once his contract starts ticking over. I think it's July if officially he becomes a Watford player. So I know nothing about him. I'm going on the basis that these sort of youngsters that make a bit of a splash on social media, that isn't an accident. People don't video him turning up because he's just one of these who's going to be moved in, moved on. there's obviously high hopes for him. And we've got to take our, on the playing side of things, we've got to take our excitement where we can get it and hope that he is a youthful player, that the next one off the rank, really, that's going to be that extra little bit of stardust to meld in with perhaps some of the more journeyman-esque players that we might be seeing in a yellow shirt next season. So yeah, excited to see how that one develops, and yeah, fingers crossed he turns out to be the next Richarlison / Pedro / Asprilla.
Thank you very much, everyone who helped out on the week on Twitter, on X. Jason, Geordie asked, after seeing how many players was Garner, Decore and Young were on the pitch with Dyche in the bench for the Everton game in the week. And he sort of said, is that the most Watford players in a Premier League side or former Watford players? Lots of people mentioned Brighton, but I've always had this issue with Stupinian. I know he was on our books, but he didn't play a competitive game. So I don't think it was quite good. Good stuff from Signor Gol, who mentioned, of course, in the season before the Premier League, inaugural season, Sheffield United, of course, had Dave Bassett in the dugout, Mel Rees, David Barnes and Glenn Hodges on their playing staff. Mark Morris and Wilf Rostrin had left the season before. So it was quite a Watford thing. There's always quite a link to Sheffield United. But of course, as you've now given him the title, Mike, the Bard of Vicarage Road, Mr. Matt Rowson, he said Cardiff 2013-14 started Andrew Taylor, Jordan Much, Don Cowie fairly frequently. Tommy Smith was there, but I don't think they all ever managed to be on the pitch at the same time. Matt Connolly was playing that side, and he'd go on to play for Watford. But also, and this is where the Bard absolutely does his detail, Rhys Healy made his debut on the last game of the season for Cardiff. So I think that's going to be the biggest Premier League side that had most former and future Hornets in it. We're going to have a chat about the long, ongoing things once the season sort of finished. And part of that, I suppose, will be the news that came out this week about the FA Cup replays being cancelled from the first round onwards. So something we're going to talk about because it's one of those slightly bigger topics and a topic that sort of merges with lots of different things, doesn't it, Mike? It is isolated, but it's mixed with lots of other things.
Yeah, I made an executive decision on this that I want to talk about it as a wider a conversation about the direction of football and the state of the pyramid. And non-league is very close to my heart. I go and watch Cheshire United as often as I can, my local team. So I see firsthand how precarious the life of a non-league football side is in terms of finances and in terms of, and also what it means to the town. It's not just when it gets higher up the pyramid is a football club's community assets, but very much the case, perhaps more so at lower league level. And I have grave concerns about the future of football in its current state and the preservation of the pyramid. And ultimately, the reason why we all love football is really in danger of being, we've spoken about the off-field stuff and how off-field isn't necessarily important, but there does need to be a product that is sustainable in terms of wanting to go and watch it. And I think we all share concerns about the direction of travel. And I think the news and the way it was announced and the consultation or lack of it about the removal of FA Cup replays after round one is symptomatic of the way the game is being run. And I think it's something that we need to discuss at greater length. And we will in a future episode of From the Rookery End, because yeah, I think it's we're concerned and we like to look at all elements of aspects of football, but we've waffled on enough this week, haven't we? We'll keep FA Cup. We'll have a replay from the Rookery End replay where we'll talk about the abolition of FA Cup replays and some of the other stuff that's potentially causing issues in the wider world of football.
Yeah, of course, and we'll have a deep discussion about our worries about the British or English European coefficient. Oh, no, we're not that worried about that either. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
And thank you, Michael.
Well done, lads. Thanks for having me.
And thank you very much for listening to this podcast. A couple more to go of this season where we'll have a... Well, yeah, we'll see how things finish. And fingers crossed, we get a home win next week. Just to sort of, settle things a little bit.
Yeah, easy. I think there's more chance of Dan Backman and Ben Hamer being announced as joint, joint players of the season than what for getting a home win, John.
See you next week. Come on, you Horns!